Blog Talk Radio.
Heavy metal band formed in Atlanta, Georgia in 1999 by the lead singer Chris Jericho, professional wrestler in the AEW, All Elite Wrestling. Jericho has characterized the group by saying it's Metallica and Journey had a bastard child, it would be Fozzy, and that's a quote. On April 26, 2017, the band released a short snippet of their new single, a music video titled Judas was premiered on Loudwire on May 2nd. Judas was later become one of the official theme songs for the WWE's Next, Takeover Chicago, as well as Jericho's theme song in New Japan Pro Wrestling and All Elite Wrestling. Judas instantly became a hit for the band, receiving over 30 million views on YouTube, reaching number one on various charts worldwide, including reaching number five on the Billboard Mainstream Rock Songs, their highest charting position for a single. And I kind of like the song, and even more so, I like the grin it puts on Chris Jericho's face when he sees, or should I say hears, the entire audience full of people singing his song. On that note, let's get into some poetry. We are kicking off Halloween week with a costume party, and I had some really cool stuff to choose from, and I'm looking forward to seeing what everyone brings because they always dazzle. This is Deborah Lee, and you're listening to A Team of Voices Radio. We're a poetry group, radio group, family that writes and hangs out together on allpoetry.com. It's a huge poetry site, and they have free membership if you want to check them out, or if you're already a member. In either case, if you'd like to hang out, go to the Groups tab and look for A Team of Voices. If you'd like to participate in the radio, you can call by dialing 1-646-668-2837, and we'd be glad to hear from you. And we means myself and my co-host, my big brother, Jay Hatter. Hey, Hatter.
Ow.
Yeah.
There we go. Howling at the kick of Halloween. And,
hey, did you leave the back door open? Did you leave the back door open?
Was it me? I'm not cleaning up the mess either.
Oh, man.
Well, we'll have to talk to the crew from last night and see what happened. It might have got a little carried away. But in the meantime, let's let some people in, starting with the dynamic duo, Stephen and Kay. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
I saw a lot
Happy
of
you are here. I'm sorry, say that again.
So I saw Lon Chaney walking with a queen doing the Werewolves of London.
Okay, there you go. That yeah. That does pretty much go quite well with Hatter's howl, doesn't it? And right behind Stephen and Kay is none other than Wayne Gent, who shaved today. Congratulations on that shave, Wayne. Welcome to the show.
Please don't Judas me.
Don't you recognize me?
Okay.
Nazareth.
Well, I'm glad you're here.
I'm here. Glad to be here. You have a great day.
And right behind Mr. Wayne Gent is David. Welcome to the show, David. Glad you're here.
Hey. Thank you, guys. I'm pleased to be here.
Dave.
I'm pleased to be here.
Dave's not here, man.
Yeah, man,
that's it.
you know, I wonder how many times during your life you've heard that. How many times?
A few.
Yeah, a few.
But it's okay. I understand it, and so I always take it in the spirit it was intended.
Embrace it.
There you go. Well, you know, just in case, We have a storm that's been trying to take hold of us, so I'm just going to dive right in and hope that nothing puts out the electricity before we get through the show. So let me run over and grab a poem written by none other than Kay, and she can kick off the show for us today. Ooh, I'm a poet. How about that? Miss Kay, the mic is yours.
Okay. I call this Sun in the Fields of Triumph. Dancing through the chameleon, sears a lance in a velvet lacens, plucked in roses, allegiance to elegance. Press morns, crux crossings to choker the beads, grace and harvest. The breath of murder, burnishing, etched in the tides of oil, contours, palmitates the softness. Hands, essential nature to the ferment of bones. Fibers are ashlar's stone crescent. wet in insult. Head hung low as to not let the blood grace the ground. Alms not thorn the impoverishment of paper and poem.
Okay, my apologies. You know, I did load your SoundCloud for you. I'm just so used to you being the first person to kick us off. I didn't even think about it. But I just wanted to tell you that I did download it. I'm so sorry. But in the meantime, I love the photo that you chose. And you start dancing through the camellias, Sears, the lancing of velvet lacing, plucked in roses. You didn't even have to say the word red there. And just because of the velvet and the roses and the camellias, the color red like jumps off the page. And I love the phrase allegiance to elegance. That's a brilliant, I think that if you turned around and just used that one phrase as a prompt for like a contest or something, that you'd get all kinds of awesome things from it, just from those three words. I love that. Towards the end, well, the stanza before the last line, it starts out etched in the tides of oil, contours, palmitate and softness, hands, essential nature to firmament of bones. A firmament of bones is a kind of mega dark image there. So I'm pulled from the reds down, and there's this sense of the surroundings, a sense of the nature that she's maybe pulling or feeling. And then something about the last line with the thorns of impoverishment on paper. Impoverishment on paper. There's a lot in this, and not a whole lot of lines, that's for sure. Essential nature to the firmament of bones. Really great. But I keep going back to that allegiance to elegance. Do you know how many directions that can be take a person in? And then you go directly to the thorns. So I like the contrast between the soft velvet and the sharp thorns, and between the again, soft of the velvet and the comparison to the elegance. I mean, you always make me think when I read your poetry, Kay. And that's pretty awesome, because a lot of times, well, not usually on these shows, but sometimes you're reading it, and I mean, I would never say it to somebody, but it just seems so ho-hum, and it's like, yeah, okay, but never when I read yours, because nobody writes metaphors the way you do. It's a very skillful thing.
Thank you.
Impressive. And again, I'm really sorry about the sound clip. Let me get you some comments. Wayne Gent, what did you think of Kay's poem?
I listened to it. It sounded excellent. She was reading real well. I had a knock on the door, but as soon as she started reading, I had to run in and run this girl off with my charger. So I went in and did my charger and ran back up there. So I didn't get to hear all of it. But it sounded great, and good wording, good phrasing, and good poem.
Thank you, Wayne.
Awesome. And before I get the next comment, let's say hello to Lady A. Hey, sis, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Lady
Glad
A.
you're here.
Thank
I'm
you.
Just about to get another yeah. comment for Kay, so sit tight, please. And Dave Prophet, will you please comment for Kay?
Yeah. Boy, this is I don't know where to start, to be honest with you. And of course, I'm lamp blue with all of Kay's work, but nobody uses words like Kay does. Nobody. I've been on this site for 6 years, and I haven't come across anybody that writes like her, even close. So, but this was interesting, and I like the just the way the metaphors are used is fascinating all in itself. Never mind the storyline. And I agree with what you said about it, Deb. It starts out in red, and to me it sort of goes black. And so it matches the color on the prompt pretty well, red and black. other than the green leaves on the rose. But I like this one here. It says, etched in the tides of oil, contours palmate the softness, the softness, hands, essential nature to the firmament of bones. This, to me, kind of gives a classic tint to it, I think. Well, the whole thing's pretty classic, classy, but this is more of a classical part of it, I think. It's a really cool poem. I liked it, I thought you did a really good job in writing it. It's real evident to me that you put a lot of thought into this poem, and so you deserve my pat on the back. Plus one of Dave Prophet's special green stars beside your name. Good job.
Thanks.
Oh, there's a comment.
You're welcome.
And before I get another one, let's say hello to a grass man. Hey, babe, welcome to the show.
Hey, hello. How you doing?
Hey,
Grass.
Hey, Grass.
Glad you're here.
Glad you, too, of getting this Halloween. 2 days in a row, man.
Hotter, will you comment for Kay?
Yeah, you know, I'm slowly walking over to the thesaurus to get the meaning of some of these, the way she used them. Just saying. But,
tell me about it.
But I know. And but I think we should tell Kay that she's moved up to the level of now she's got to rhyme.
So Kay's not a rhymer.
I think she could with no trouble.
I don't doubt one bit that she could.
I think she could too.
It gives her a comfort level that would give her the, for lack of a better word, therapy that she would get from her poems, because she'd be stressing over trying to rhyme, just like I stress when I write free verse. And you do, Hatter. So, like, get off her case. Just saying.
What?
I'm just teasing.
Only when you guys do that crap where you could read it forward and backwards. That's just, yeah, okay. Handcuff me. No, great
but
piece
anyway.
Nicely written. Nicely written.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Stephen, will you please comment for Kay and then read us your poem?
Yeah, I like this. Of course, in many ways, I like everything you write. To me, I saw beauty with a bite. I saw strength in this, but some of the words to me spoke of wounds that never heal. But you brought it in a very beautiful and brilliant way, as you always do.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh,
how do you get so many views? Look at that list of views. I didn't know there was that many. Oh, it's on this site.
I should not pay him, I think, you know. Just kidding.
All right. This one, I've been getting into, like Deb does, using song lyrics as a title. So I chose that skeleton, and I call this, There's a Skeleton Choking on a Crust of Bread. It goes like this. Treblinka skeleton shrouded in skin. Rib bones interlocking between ivory cages. Ashen frowns of witnessing. Faraway look of death and eggshell eyes piled like cordwood against cement block walls. Dust-covered fan blade bolted to squinting eye under the mirrored shadow of the cobweb ceiling. End poem.
My. I love that.
Wow.
There's a skeleton choking on a crust of bread. And I found myself giggling there, thinking, well, what the hell does a skeleton need with a crust of bread? Anyway, I like the, where it's at, ashen frowns of witnessing, faraway look of death in eggshell eyes, piled like cordwood against cement block walls. I'm just realizing that this is a 10. And how many words are here, Stephen? Do you know how much harder it is to get the less the words, the harder it is to get a 10. So start there. Bravo.
No way.
If you look through my list of 10, there might be one that's short like this. And I remember saying this to you before about how much harder it is to get a 10 on a brevity. So, again, wow.
Contact high. Sitting in the same room.
Yeah, this is really good. And dust-covered families bolted to squinting eye. It's got perfect details, and you didn't need any more words to describe this photo, but I'm just quite taken by the fact that it's a 10. Woohoo! 225, Stephen.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Very cool.
Call that
gold. Very cool.
Call that gold.
Go ahead and comment, Heather.
Yeah, 10's just like a gold. Size. Put this over your ladies. No, this is well done. What have you done with Steven? I don't know who you are.
Yeah,
no,
right.
It's like I love the picture. I came late, so a lot of the pictures were taken over. This is a great picture. Maybe what you say to the supermodels, eat a cheeseburger, damn.
Yeah, really. Some french fries. No shake.
Let me get a comment from Lady A, please.
Well, I was really surprised at the brevity and packing so much into it. I thought you did a really great job with that, and you've always been, in any case, a very talented writer, and I'm just trying to bring it up again. Here it is. And I thought it was very, there was a bit of humor in here where, you know, when you talked about the eating of the, where is it now? Wasn't there something about you were eating eggshells? Wait now, what was it that you said about the, was it your poem that said that? Anyway, this thing, far away, look at death and eggshell eyes. But I, maybe it wasn't your poem, I'm sorry, but I thought that when you started it out that was a brilliant first word, Treblinka, because, you know, it spoke about the Holocaust and the Treblinka people, the Jews that were in there and in all the other camps, were indeed skeletons shrouded in skin, rib bones interlocking between ivory cages. I thought that was really quite poignant. I think it's important to write poems like this as well to keep that in the forefront. You describe them perfectly. And I think that when you had the last verse, the dust-covered fan blade bolted to squinting eye under the mirrored shadow of a cobweb ceiling, to me that spoke of the suspicion of other people after you experienced living or existing in a place like Treblinka. And I thought that it was really an excellent piece, actually.
Well, thank you very much.
Awesome comment. How about you, Gret?
Well, I think Lady A stole some of my thunder. Treblinka is the Holocaust, you know. Whenever I hear that word, it's just like, you know, the bodies and the skeletons that remained and the horrors of that time period. It does give to ghosts and them wanting revenge for the atrocities that were committed against them. And I thought he did a great job on the brevity and putting so much packed effort into it. It was really good.
Thanks, Chris.
Awesome comment. And Kay, will you comment even, please?
Oh, yeah. Well, I will second what everybody says, but I will also tell you, I know what you did with your muse.
Oh, of course you know.
Yeah.
You're right next to me.
You added a kiss, but you also added a kiss, too. So, yeah, I see history, but I see a bit of humor with your closing, too.
A little touch of it.
Yeah. A little touch of it, yeah. It's a, it's a well-rounded right, I'll tell you that.
Thank you.
Awesome. And Hatter, it's the same old spot as yesterday. Now, Stephen, would you like to tell us what's happening over at A Poetic Slice of Life this week?
Sure. Yeah. Tonight, actually, in a little over an hour, 11:30 p.m. Eastern, we have the Mortuary of Shadow, and we are going to celebrate the kickoff of Halloween week with Mr. Halloween himself, Michael Myers. We have digital art of Mr. Myers to write to, Mr. Tall, Dark, and Quiet. Check out the pictures. We'll take some news. Don't be fun. Wednesday's the Poetic Inklings, 10 p.m. We're going to keep on the dark side, and we have quotes from the book Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde to write to. And then a special Inklings on Thursday at, what time is that, 9 p.m.?
Yeah.
9 p.m. Eastern. It's the one-word prompt, and I'm going to butcher this word and say Rakuyu, I think. It's Japanese for fallen leaves. And then, Friday night is our anniversary show of our Poetic Slice of Life, 2 years on the air, and we're going to celebrate with Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Mm-hmm.
Woohoo! Can you believe it's been 2 years? It feels like a blink.
Yeah.
I know.
So I'm very excited for you, and that's where I'm at on your list that night as far as writing. So I'm caught up pretty well over there, and I still can't believe it's been 2 whole years. Time flies when you're having so much fun. We are going to hit 3 in March, and that blows my mind. So, but you know, an interesting little tidbit as far as the timing goes. I noticed that on the Blog Talk Radio main page where only they have any influence over what gets put there. There happens to be a show by Poetic Slice of Life on that page, and they only put 5 there. So that's awesome. Congratulations, guys. Now, without further ado, I am going to grab another Oh, now, Gress, how much time do you have? Because I don't – usually I know who stays and who –
Maybe I can stay all night. That's the way I do it. You know how I am. I can go all
okay,
night
cool.
long.
That works. Okay, let me grab a poem, you knucklehead. Okay, let's see. Where is my list? Wayne, right after Stephen, so let me find Wayne's poem. And I believe I have a clip from Wayne.
Yes, it's a
and when you guys send me clips, did you say no?
I said no. I said I enjoyed this poem. It's one of my favorite ones I wrote.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, there is yours. And let me run to the studio. Find your Wayne. Okay.
Yes.
Here we go.
My mummy.
This is called Curse of the Mosaic Mummy. Catching curse of the pharaohs from broken tomb lid. Assassinating amputee applauds escaping pyramid. Commanding spells crawls from sand-covered canvas. Wearing tassels, satin ribbons. Now skirts on surface. Tossing stone stairs like trinkets. Whispering men weep. Guarding mummy's shadowed sword. Sharpened to keep. Calling beveled bees, barbed bats, and bubbled blackbirds. woolly webs of wicked woolly walls of crowing herds. Prism of torch flames, lit alleyway for Egyptian ambassador. Venom dart of dimpled death, dotted dwelling door. Molded marble mass mummy, Manus marched to men. Sheltered skipper scalded, scalloped and spiked to end. Patches of perfume puddles, poisonous to puppeteer people. Porcelain pathway panels packed with powdered pebble. Ebony eraser eyes ignites Earth's emerald enemy's kingdom. Cadmium-colored chrome cleaver catches crevice of cerebellum. Satan stands and stares while scarlet stains stream surrogate shore. Molded metallic muscle machinery of men marches no more. In.
Wow. Wow. I'm starting to see why you record them and then sit back with us and listen. It does add something to it to know that you're sitting there and I'm hearing you, but you're listening to yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And I like, man, you packed alliteration all through this. It seems like it would be a hard read. Commanding spells, crawls from sand-covered Kansas, wearing tasseled satin ribbons, now skirts on surface. Prisms of torch flames lit alleyway to Egyptian ambassador, denim dart of dimpled death, dotted dwelling door. I mean, whoa, bravo. You must have used a gazillion words. I'm recognizing a lot of word bank words, Wayne. You always impress me. Do you know how many are in here?
I don't know. We didn't really have word bank at the time. We didn't
no?
use word bank at the time.
I can see all these different words from different. So, no, that's even more exciting because I'm seeing all kinds of words that I've offered up on occasion during word bank. So the fact that you're using them without a word bank, because that's what I'm trying to, I was like, wait, but I think it's fabulous that you have so many of them in here. And I bet you there's a dozen in each stanza. And you always pack them in brilliantly with the detail and the story and the alliteration. And this time there was a, I don't know if somber is the right word. There was sort of like maybe empathy in your voice as you read.
That's just my second highest rated poem of all time.
Really?
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
That's awesome, and I like the way it felt listening to that tone in your voice because the listener's ear is pulled into the emotion that you're spilling through your voice. So I think you did a really great job with the recording as well.
Thank you. Yeah,
let me get you some comments. How about Kay, please?
Well, yeah. When I had commented on this over the weekend, I decided to listen to the audio. I think the audio is cool, the music that's put in and the way you do read it. Because, yeah, I started doing audios for my rights, too, as I write them, just so that way I can have them if I decide to use them in other shows. There's something to be said for making the audios because you get to take your time and it gives you a better feel for the words so that way you can go at your own pace and speak in soft and slow. It's that way you get it all articulated right. But I like how you're saying this because there's a lot of alliteration. A lot of word bank words, but this is cool too. I definitely like the line, sat, stands, and stares while scarlet stained stream serrates shore. That's stellar line. It leaves a lot to envision right there, Fat. But the whole right is strong. It's concrete. It gives a lot to think on. It's all small around.
Oh, great comment, Kay. Great comment.
Fabulous comment. And how about you, Stephen?
Well, I said my comment, holy alliteration, Batman. So the whole storyline actually made me think of the Mummy movie, the one starring Brendan Fraser, especially because at the end you bring in modern times to mix in with ancient Egypt. I thought this was an excellent, very well done.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Awesome comment. Thank you very much. And how about you, David?
I really like this one. I think the way Wayne picked the music for this was priceless. I thought it went with the poem very well. I like the way he read it. I like the emphasis that he put on the each individual line. It really made this thing really three-dimensional. I too notice a little empathy towards the Mummy here, I think. You know, they're a much discussed and centralized idea of Egyptology. You know, they're mummified because the Egyptians, ancient Egyptians, thought that, you know, they were the better they put them back together, the better off they were in the afterlife. And you know, they have endured centuries and centuries.
Right. Don't bother them.
And they've been subject to tomb grave robbing and all that sort of stuff down through the years. And it gives you some empathy when you think about these people, whether they were some sort of a scribe in the temple or whether they were a pharaoh. You know, it just puts them kind of all in the same boat, so to speak. And I thought you did a really good job on this, Wayne. I really liked it. I'm real partial to Egyptology anyway, and I thought you did this justice about 110%. So good job.
Thank you there, Dave.
You're welcome.
Fantastic comment. How about you, Hatter?
Yeah, I tried to get back to it. Well, you're going to have to pass me. I can't find anything.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. How
great
about
time.
You, Sis?
Well, I thought you did a really great job, Wayne. You had me quite mesmerized by your poem. It was interesting. It was spooky, but it was more, to me, it was more interesting than spooky. It was intriguing is a good word to use for your piece. I'm very much enjoying the way you write now. It's quite interesting, and it's fun to see how you've evolved. Or maybe you've always been like this, and you just hid it from all of us. I don't know, because
I've always been crazy.
What?
I've always been crazy.
Oh no, your writing is really great. This piece is really good. And I'm, as you know, I'm not a big Halloween fan. I'm a very much a chicken when it comes to things like that. I'm not a.
Will?
You know.
We're going
to
camp trip here in about 2 days. In about
2 days. As long as you don't get ghosted, Lady A.
Lady A's going camping. And
oh,
she may
that's
not return.
Right. It's too cold to go camping now. It's freezing out now. But it must be warm where you were.
Good damn. I'm ready for the comment. You know, Wayne, you do. I don't know if you realize you do so well with the word bank when you lead with the same letter words. That's not easily done and still seem coherent to the your verse. Wanted to tell you do it every week. And this one is more so. The only little hiccup was what was it? Tossing stone stairs. How about skipping stone stairs? The way you introduce some of the metaphors is sort of opposite what other poets do. You tend to go for the action rather than the description. Description comes later, which is a style. and it seems to be you do it well. And I can't believe how being handcuffed with a word bank, you keep continuity with the story. Very well done.
Tricky, fun to do.
Awesome comment, Hatter. And let me get one more from Gress.
All right. I enjoyed it. The thing I thought was the coolest was the second stanza. Wow. Poisonous to puppets, hear people, personalized pathway panels packed with powdered stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not easy to write
crazy.
Like that. All those T's in a row, that's awesome. Scary tale damnation, especially written and recording. I love the recording behind the words. That was pretty awesome.
It came up pretty good, I thought. I enjoyed it.
Bevel bees.
Sending some bevel bees and barbed bats. I thought that was pretty wild.
Exactly. Yeah. That would be
awesome comments. Now, if you guys click on Angel's poem, I'll read for her.
Thanks for coming, guys. Somebody's making a lot of noise.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing, but it seems like they just muted, so that's good. Okay, do you guys see Angel's poem? It's called The Ghost of Once Was by Heavenly Angel.
I do.
And here we go.
I do.
In an old and seemingly deserted house, he sits staring into moonless, starry night, haunted by memories of a long-ago love. Gusty winds blow dry autumnal leaves across stone pavement. They made a dry, whispering sound in the quiet, the sound that ghosts might make, if there really were such a thing. Tonight, he wasn't so sure there weren't. He could feel her presence in every nook, every corner of the house, wandering through the halls or simply gazing at him with those cornflower blue eyes or smiling at him with those full, pouty lips. Funny what the mind pops up, remembers. As he turns away from the window, he comes face to face with her silhouette, dressed in the ivy organza dress she wore on their wedding day. She smiles that smile that would thaw glaciers in an instant, and lovingly touches his face with a feathery touch only an angel would possess. In a voice soft as silk, she whispers, "I've never left you, my love. I'm always with you, only a thought away." Tears fill his eyes, and as she reaches his hands towards her, she fades into a glimmering silver mist, yet he distinctly hears, "Forever and always, I am here. I love you." End poem. There's a heavenly contact.
Doesn't really say how he
or a heavenly angel. Say that again.
Doesn't really say how he reacted to her presence.
Sure, sure does. At the end, it says
where?
Tears fill his eyes, and as
oh,
he reaches his hand towards hers, she fades into a glimmering silver mist. So, yeah,
well,
he's very touched. He's crying.
Yeah,
he's got
right.
tears in his eyes.
I was always looking back before that showed up. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Okay, Roseanne, Dana.
Yeah,
I
was just saying exactly
yeah,
the
was,
same thing.
Never mind.
Right, right.
But,
exactly
yeah,
the
no,
same
this one. This one's got double awards, two contests,
oh, really?
Both awarded for this one. Easy to see why. I like how the question tonight, he wasn't sure there weren't. And then it goes on to convince us that there was, that she was there, that she was watching, that she's always there. The love's always there. So much so that he felt it and he wept. So the sentiment in this oozes over the page, and the hope for the same experience from someone who's gone is what you're left with, or what I'm left with there. Wouldn't it be nice to have an encounter now and then and assure you that he or she's okay where they are? Great share, Angel, and as always, it's my honor to be your reader.
Heavenly Angel, she's the classic poet. You know, you take all the dark things we carry with us. Heavenly Angel is the true Hallmark poet. I mean, it's beautifully done, every one of her pieces.
Yeah. Beautiful comment, Heather. Wayne, what did you think?
I think this is the best ghostly love poem of all time. It gave me goose pimples, but nothing and scared, just being so warm and touching. I wish I had a sweet little ghost that would join me and then just disappear. Yeah, when it stays, it's when it gets scary. This is a wonderful, loving poem, and has a lot of intimate emotions in it, and I just want to go out and hug a ghost. Great job.
Fabulous comment. And David?
Oh, I just had to take myself off mute. Yeah, this is really, really beautiful. Of course, we all know that Angel wrote it because it smacks of her. But, this is – I always thought the combination of ghosts and past loves goes well together, you know, because, if you've lost somebody that you love, you never forget about them. They're just sort of hanging out, you know, with you. All the time, or they come and visit you when they think you need it, even if you don't know you need it. Anyhow, that's kind of what this poem reminded me of. Angel has a really nice ability, or a great ability, to express her what's in her heart, and she always has the best things in her heart. So I thought this was a really great poem.
Fantastic comment. And one more from Gress, please.
Basically, it's a beautiful ghost story, because it's not a scary one. It's basically where two souls cross in the night and they find each other again. And I thought she did a wonderful job with the metaphors on here. I love this one particularly well. She smiles that smiles that would thaw glaciers in an instant, and lovely touches his face with the feathery touch only an angel would possess. And that right there is like when you find someone that they'll be there for you when you're gone. They're waiting for you. I love this story. It was well done.
Fantastic comment. Thank you very much. And I am about to put your poem on the board, David. So as soon as I find it, there it is. As soon as you see it pop up, please go ahead and grab the mic.
Got it.
And unmute.
Yeah, unmute.
Yeah, okay. Me and that mute button. Gee, I've never had any trouble with it before, you know? Anyhow,
hey, I've never
I'm
muted
sorry.
Myself.
This,
I've never muted it. Never
yeah. Yeah, I know it. Anyway, this is a new character of mine. Her name, and I just developed it because of this fabulous prompt that Deborah sent me. And the poem's called Norlethia, and it reads like this. Alien race from the large moon of LB-426 performs its orbital ballet in the Lagrangian L5 resonance around this giant exoplanet, orbiting a solar system sun within life-giving Goldilocks zone, its moon rotational period gives it 84 hours to rotate on its 90-degree axis. Equally split on the 90-degree plane gives it 42 hour days exactly. A predatory species humans would call vampires evolved after the moon became habitable. They preyed on the subculture that arose when the main populace died out from an engineered disease that escaped unaffecting the engineered race known as the Lethra, whose sole duty it was to protect the world from foreign invaders. Highly intelligent and adaptive, they developed a taste for the subspecies' blood, for they were the pinnacles of races. The remaining race that was not dead from their biological tampering managed to develop a vaccine that eradicated their very own virus. Now they faced an equally greater threat from the Lethra. Rather than create another disease to destroy the Lethra, they biologically developed a new life form they called xenomorphs, savage creatures with acid for blood, whose reflexes gave them uncanny speed and could look microseconds into the future to see where their prey would be at the next instant in time. The xenomorph's Achilles heel was their own future Kent's view, would not tolerate any light from their sun. The Lethra were not affected in this way. They flew with mastery within the alien skies above LB-426. These became known as Lethra, the protectors. They adopted physical traits of night and days, which bore upon them equal parts in obsidian blacks and silver grays of their own orbital sun, moons. You can see them this very day visiting a third moon from the sun, and their crest of the face huggers defended by their moon's glare. They are an orderly species, and their queen is Norlethia, is a dark vixen. Cast not long your gaze into her eyes, for she is a spellcaster. Her picture is at the top of this document. End poem.
Imagine
wow.
if you will.
Right? You know, David, sometimes by the time you get done sharing us a story, like with all the sci-fi details, I find that I feel dumb in some of the areas, and I'm like, wait, what? And you talk about having to look up some of the metaphors that Kay uses, but you write with your big old brain, and we have to look stuff up too, just saying. But it's those details that make us enthralled in the story and pulls in the sci-fi-ness. So I'm not trying to discourage those details. I'm just trying to say sometimes I just don't feel very smart. And you put in so much depth that by the time you're done with your stories, and if we'll call each poem a chapter in a novel, you get us invested in these characters that you create. Like, I can't name too many people that have been on the radio for more than 5 minutes that don't know who the Dark Mother is. And that's a tribute to your pen, David, because, like, you know, and for us to enjoy the details and story after story of her is already, a tribute to your storytelling skills, because I always call you the storyteller poet. But it's the stuff like these with the reflexes gave an uncanny speed and could look microseconds into the future. And sometimes those microseconds is all it takes to change things. So it's little details like that that make you think. And I even understood that part. But I mean, usually the words that you use that I'm not quite sure of that I look up later don't change the context of the story for me. So it's not like I get lost. I'm not trying to say that, because you always put enough layman's terms in there that, you know, we can all follow along. Highly intelligent and adaptive, they developed a taste for subspecies blood, for they were pinnacle races. I'm like, whoa. But there was something about an antivirus. I'm trying to find it while I run my mouth, and it'll be the last thing I steal. I'll leave something for somebody else to comment on. But the fact that you pulled in the need for an antivirus, like for that vaccine, added dimension to it because of what we're going through with COVID and vaccinations and stuff like that. So it made it more plausible, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And you always manage to do that. And I will wait to see how long you continue to write for this chick and find out what she smells like at some future time.
Okay, okay.
Okay, so
sounds
let me get a
me.
Comment from Mr. Wayne Jensen.
Thank you, Deborah.
Well, I'm a little spaced out anyway, so it's a space point is what I needed. You said there are 84 days to rotate on its 90-degree axis, means this probably don't have a dark side of this moon. You have created a wonderful space program here, and you've developed each one of the space aliens to a movie degree where you can see them without even seeing a picture of them. The moon LV-426 must be a great place for a summer college, and I think you got a great storyline, but a little bit complex. I kind of lost about halfway through to figure out where it was going. But it's a good job on this, and I read it well, and I enjoyed the poem.
Oh, thanks, Wayne.
Excellent comment. And what do you think of that, Chris?
Well, you know, I wish I could have had time to collaborate with him because, to me, I'm a sci-fi buff, and he knows it. We both commented before on our sequences of different, Star Trek and Voyager. And this is kind of like a cross between, like, Voyager – you know, where they had the vaccine and the one scene where if they didn't get the vaccine, they were going to be turned into monsters. And then the other part is where the underworld, where the vampires versus another subspecies. I mean, it has all the trappings of something that's wonderfully unique and new. And I really enjoyed it. It inspired me to think about this subcultural of mixing sci-fi with vampires. I mean, dude, you got a movie here, man. You really do.
Well, part of it, I pulled away from Alien, LV-426, and the xenomorphs. You know, they were the monsters in Alien, and so I kind of mixed it up that way a little bit too.
Do you remember Prometheus when the movie Prometheus and the Alien? And basically the god person or whoever was going to kill Earth, right? Because it was a mistake and they let them live.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to band together to kill this like lord or this like considered to be godlike creature that created the Earth and then wanted to get rid of him because it was nothing but a pestilence, you know, and all those other things. It was a mistake. And that's kind of like what you're saying basically here is like we made a mistake and we made these creatures to kill other things and now they're killing us. So we're going to come up with another creature to kill them. It's awesome. It's really done.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Chris. Thank you.
And how about you, Heather?
I know we're getting geeky on you, right? Right, Deb?
Yep.
Did you say Heather?
I'm glad you straightened that out.
Yes, I did.
You know, Dave, you did a great job describing the new characters and their properties and the potentials. The xenomorphs, that was great. They could see where the prey would be in the next millisecond, but they couldn't bring the light with them. Is that correct?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, their Achilles heel. So you gave their weakness too. And you kept it solid through the description. Wonderfully done. I get all of this. This is out of my wheelhouse. So I understand where you're coming from there.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Hatter. That pleases me.
I could hear Rod Serling and Carl Sagan reading this.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, thank
That's
you,
an
guys.
Awesome comment.
Thank you. Yes. It is.
And,
it is.
Okay, now, Lady A, I know you're trying to put finishing touches on yours, but would you comment for David and read the poem on the board for me, please? Sis?
I'm mute. Good.
Yes, I was talking through my mute button.
Say the best things.
I think I did put one in the room, but it's finished. It's been finished, but I can read that poem for sure. I gotta
keep refreshing. It's not there. I'll go check the other topic boards just in case.
Okay, you want me to read by Forgotten Madge?
First comment for Dave and then read that one for me.
Well, David, you know, I know that you're a scientific brain who writes scientific and futuristic kind of poetry, but I'm just going to say osmosis, okay? That's what I understand about science. My biology. I'm just joking, but I just said, I'll just say osmosis so that you'll think I'm smart too, because I don't understand what you're writing. I know it's good. I really do. And it's very educated, but it's at times over my head as well. The storyline is always, very Star Trek-y, which is tricky. Because you have to understand the planet and the universe to be able to write like that. And so that takes brains, and I don't have those kinds of brains. Give me a wound, I'll be able to dress it and assess it and report back to the doctor what my opinion is. But I can't, you know, this is really, I'm always intrigued by your writing because it is very intelligent writing. It's very scientific, very chemistry and physics-based, and it takes a smart person to do that.
Well, thank you, Lady A. All I want, you know, just being honest with me is great. And, you know, if you don't like it sometimes, just say, hey, well, I didn't really like this, Dave. You know, that wouldn't hurt my feelings either, you know. So
You do. It's like Deborah said, you have a big brain, and sometimes, you know, when you get talking about the universe, as you do, it's. I just smile and nod because I don't know half of what you're talking about, but I know that it's good because you get it all. It's certainly not an insult. It's a compliment to your intelligence.
Oh, thank you.
I agree. And it's also cool to listen to the joy he gets out of reading the stuff.
Yeah.
So the joy in his voice outweighs me not knowing what a word or two here or there means.
Yeah, but doesn't it invite you to go look up LV426, see what he's talking about?
No,
it doesn't.
I'm sorry.
I like that. No, that's funny. That's cool.
Without that exploration, Lady A, we'll never be able to get off this planet.
Oh, no, that's okay with me. I'm happy here.
Some of the best pictures.
But we're not
going to
have enough
pictures ever taken.
50 years.
Those are funny.
My, oh, my. Okay, Lady A, will you please read for Forgotten Mage?
Pause.
Okay, this is called Jack-O-Lantern. I forgot. Madge or Mage? Okay.
Suppose it could be either. I say mage, tomato, tomato, whatever.
That's what I'd say.
Upon the darkened porch, the jack-o'-lantern sits, his golden candle-lit gaze towards... Sorry, I'm going to start over again. Upon the darkened porch, the jack-o'-lantern sits, his golden candle-lit gaze warding off the evil spirits, keeping the monsters that stalked that night at bay. How frightful must it be to gather the skeletons of disembodied voices and peering eyes of evil into his cloak of shadows, harboring the hellish screams to unleash upon the unsuspecting child who dares to question the Pumpkin King's reign. Loosing the creatures to creep and crawl, stalking from deep within the shadows, where they nibbled and gnawed, waiting for the word, the nod of the ever-glowing, watching eye of the jack-o'-lantern and his gleaming grimace. I pray you do not forget his blessings. Do not take lightly the throne on which he sits. For he only protects those that truly believe. on this night of horror, the night of Hallow's Eve. He has no patience to save the souls of those he'd rather live to trick than treat. End
got a
poem.
Pumpkin on your porch? Got a pumpkin on your porch?
Pumpkin on your porch. Halloween.
Would you make the first comment? Because I'm trying to find the photo to show you guys.
Will I make the first comment?
Yeah, you read
well,
it.
I thought it was really well written. I don't know if she said me or not. Excuse me if she didn't. I thought it was very well written. I thought it was just scary enough. And it reminded me that why I hate Halloween, because of all the creatures and the creepy crawlies and things like that that come out on Halloween. I think there's one line, I think it's the third verse. Harboring the hellish screams to unleash upon the unsuspecting child who dares to question the Pumpkin King's reign. No, that's not the line. It's the second verse. How frightful it must be to gather the skeletons of disembodied voices and peering eyes of evil into his cloak of shadows. Like, come on. That's really scary.
Hey, Lady A.
Yes. Yes.
When you were reading this, for some stupid reason, I thought you had written this. I'm going, wait a minute. This is pretty damn to it for somebody that doesn't like Halloween. But I.
She did a great job. It's a great poem. She did an excellent job. Yeah. But it's quite scary for sure.
When you start hearing the voices.
I know. I'll never forget the time
I'm still thumbing through it, but the poem was awesome, and I think that you did an incredible job reading it, and there was something in the hushed tone of your voice while you read for her that added to it, and I bet you she'll get a kick out of hearing it read.
I hope so.
And I'm loving all the poems that she's entered so far. So I really, really hope you keep them coming. Brilliant, Cher.
Yeah, she's good, isn't she?
Cher. And is that the one? Nope. It's.
Did you find mine yet?
It's what?
Did you find mine yet?
Yours isn't on the board, so I just went to your page.
Okay, I'm going
to
go get it. Sorry about that.
No, it's all right. I already went there. It's good. But I looked at all the topics. It was never added there, so it's not a big deal. But, yeah, it's absolutely brilliant, and I will find it while I get another comment. Wayne, will you comment, please? Wayne, are you still here? Okay, maybe not. Hatter, will you comment?
I thought I sort of did, but I'll continue.
You did. Yeah.
This is like I said, the whole piece. I thought it was Lady Ace. I was going to give her the business when she got done, but it wasn't her. It explains a lot. This is well done. She read it very well, Lady A.
Thank you.
It's got it all. It's all here. You got tradition and the protection of the evils of Halloween and the demons. Got the King of Pumpkins. Yeah, it's all here.
Yeah.
Very
now,
good.
Just to show you how or what she was inspired by, I did find her prompt and I put it on the board. And her write and your read was just as spooky as that photo that I just added. So...
Oh.
Great all around. And before I get the next comment, let me AP.
I don't see it. Oh, there it is.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Hey, AP.
Ooh, that is scary.
Hi, Deb. Great image.
Welcome to the show. Yeah.
Hi.
Thank you.
That's the one that Lady A just read for one of the newer poets. And I was just about to let David comment on her poem.
Well, I thought this was classic storytelling, and you know, for Halloween. Like Hatter said, has the Pumpkin King on it, or Jack-o'-lantern King, or whatever you want to call him. She has a really unique way of description, you know, it sort of grabs onto you and pulls you right into the story. And I thought that was really outstanding. The way Lady A read it was really good. It was almost like
she read it.
No, I didn't mean it that way. I meant like it was like maybe the pumpkin guy here had a hold of her and was forcing her to read it. It kind of came across that way a little bit, which added to the drama that was already in the poem. It added to it even more. And I think he did a good job reading it, Lady A. And the combination was really, between the two, was really well done. It was scary. It was. So, a classic Halloween.
That was me tying her down.
Great writer.
Awesome stuff. Now, I have a question. AP, do you need to go before Budo's poem, or can you go after it?
No, I can go after it.
Okay, cool. Then, Gress, will you comment for Forgotten and then read Budo for me?
I love the jack-o'-lantern one. The jack-o'-lantern is supposed to ward off evil spirits from coming into your house. So that's why he's the pumpkin king. So don't be playing. Don't be trying to stump on the jack-o'-lanterns, because you never know what's going to happen to you. That's a warning to kids out there trying to bust up the pumpkin on the doorstep. Don't do that. He may just come back and eat you alive.
Stay in school. There's a reason they call him Jack.
Yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you want me to read this one from Budo?
Yes, please.
All right, I got to make it bigger. Hold on one second.
Too getting too tight?
I'm getting too old.
Oh, okay.
I love the picture, by the way.
Yeah.
And this is called Deftones, Fingers Failing Feverishly, a Trifecta of Staccato Steps, Nimble Mind, Numbing Nuance, Energized by excited atoms, vibrating slipstream sequences, and a modal scale of refractive fretting, linked via chain reaction, vibrato blending elixir wound stings, pixelated plectrum picking up strokes, dive bombing octaves, chromatic tremolo, reverberating chaotic tension in a dual 12-inch tweed cover cabinet. The inner demon is exposed outright, bleeding from the poorest melodies, glossing over facial expression, whence the devil made done and reaps, grins and howls of slithered silent harmony.
Interesting ending. I missed that part. This is really cool. I kind of knew he would use
mm-hmm.
this photo. Quite often he takes the ones with a guitar involved. Fingers flailing feverishly, a trifecta, staccato steps, nimble mind, numbing nuance. We got some alliterations going on in this one, too. I like it. Linked via chain reactions, vibrato bending elixir wound strings. Is it the end?
Wound.
Glossing over facial
That's
expressions, wound. Whence the devil made done in reaps and howls of slithered silent harmony. There's something really gross about the thought of slithered silent harmony. I think that Budo did a really awesome job with this. And between your read and the addition of the laughter at the end, you did a great job reading his words for him. And will you comment too, please?
Well, I thought what I thought of every time when I was reading this, I was thinking about, you know, like all the great guitarists, like they get so deep into their guitar that nothing else matters. You know, they get possessed by the actual lyrics or the song that they're playing. And then the word, when he's talking about pixelated plectrum picking up strokes, dive bonding octaves, he's talking about all the strokes that you do on a guitar that makes it just rattle and shake and makes the crowd go wild, and it gets everybody whipped into a frenzy. And you know, those type of guitarists just like are hard few between that can do that.
Yeah.
I really like the wording that he put in there. The musically gifted guitar player that has the demon strings. I thought it was really good.
Santana.
Awesome comment and a great read. And Lady A, will you comment, please?
Well, I think that Budo has a great talent. Of course, that picture was, you know, made to have at the top of his poem. But I think that music, of course, is the muse that he uses in this. And talking about it in a, like, nimble mind, numbing nuance, you know, those are really, that's great alliteration there. But it's almost like he's playing as though he's trying to hypnotize you, that he is the devil incarnate. Was, as he said here, the inner demon is exposed outright, bleeding from porous melodies, glossing over facial expression, whence the devil made done in reaps, grins, and howls of slithered silent harmony. Like it's the music that's is the adder, is the snake that drew Adam in. It's the same kind of thing, is that this music is mesmerizing and the devil is the head of it, and he's sucking everybody into his vortex so that you can be trapped in it forever. Very good. I'm getting twisted reading these poems.
Yeah, you are. I was going to say, I think something just happened when you said tracked, or maybe demons were popping out of you or something.
No, I don't like that. See, that's what's scary to me about this stuff, because I think that stuff is real.
You're sounding like you're having fun to me. And
hey, Deb. Deb.
David.
Could
David?
I comment on this?
Yes, you can.
Yes? Oh, okay. Being a guitar player, I can identify with this. Let me correct a few things here. The third stanza down, it says vibrato bending elixirs. That's not wound, that's wound. Wound strings, because guitars use a round wound string on them instead of a flat wound string like an electric bass does. Pixelated plectrums picking up strokes, dive bombing. Dive bombing is when Eddie Van Halen was famous for that, when you hit your, they call it a whammy bar or tremolo bar, and you drop tune the guitar way down, you know, you've all heard that. That's what that's all about.
No.
And then a chromatic tremolo, that's, chromatic is a scale. It's a, it's just one of the many, there's all sorts of different scales, but reverberating chaotic tension in a dual 12 tweed covered cabinet. A lot of the old early Fender Twin Reverbs had two 12-inch speakers in them, and some of them were put in a cabinet that was covered by tweed, so that's where that's coming from. You know, I know sometimes that when I'm having a good day on my guitars, they just become an extension of yourself. You really don't have to think about playing them. They just sort of go on autopilot, and it's real easy to lose yourself in them like that, and the better you get at it, the more that happens. And so I thought that Budo really put this together well, and he described what it's like to be a guitar player. So anyway, that's my two cents.
Awesome two cents, David. And
you're welcome.
AP, will you comment for Budo and then put your poem on the board for us, please?
Of course. Sure. Yeah, look, it's a great image, Deb. I love the image. And I've enjoyed Dave's comment because of the nature of the musician and what he's actually put into those words. And it's not just alliteration, but it's meaningful alliteration. And I love the final stanza with the inner demon being exposed outright, bleeding from porous melodies. So beautiful words, but written as a musician. So really nice poem.
Great comment. Thank you, everyone. And your turn, AP.
Oh, can I say something real quick?
Well, I've gone back.
Oh, yep, sure, Howard.
I look forward every Monday to wondering if we're going to get one of Budo's songs, and I'm let down every time there's not one. Just saying.
Very good musician, but he used his musical talent for good there, Hatter. So, I've gone back. Hatter and I have spoken about Greek poetry, and if you're going to talk about Greek legends, you have to, of course, talk about the Medusa from the 8th century in Greek poetry. And this is called Medusa, and certainly not from the 8th century. It's from about 8 minutes ago. And it goes a little bit like this. Narrow corridors here dark, nooks to crannies intersect. Flaring torches, pale blue arc, light diffuse is hard to detect. Darkens as if here a prison, then here the slithering first. Medusa find has here risen, soon the hissing fit to burst. A creature appears, head flows, where vipers by a dozen peer. Eyes and jaws make vile rows, venom glistens and jaws as leer. In a cape dark that is soaked with the blood of victims past, eyes scarlet red as soaked by demons' raids once cast. Her eyes fixed while they hone onto any living creatures near, those sighted turned to stone in just the briefest gaze here. Weaving off a glamorous face, power and suffering to heal, oil and weed, snakes chase, upon this globe lives they steal. End poem.
You know, I know I've said this before, but there's something about the contrast between the tones in your voice and the way you read and dark details when you bring them, like with the blood of victims past, her scarlet red eyes are stoked by demons' wraths once cast, her eyes fixed while they hone onto the living creatures near, those sighted turn to stone from just the briefest gaze, fear. The details that you put in perfectly describe Medusa, and the, like I said, I don't know what it is. It sets off because you want to hear these calming things come from your voice, but instead you have people turning the stone and you have snakes chasing and the darkness of a prison and hissing. And it just, the contrast for me is really cool because, like, you don't do a lot of darkness. So it's not a shock to the system. But you know what I mean, when somebody does something it's not what they normally do. And your voice, you can lend such a soft tone, almost angelic. So when you put that together with the blood of the victims and stuff, it just, it gets me. It's like, whoa, weaving of a glamorous base. I think that's what you do. You weave the poems with perfect rhyme and flow and detail, and then you put on the glamorous bass, which is your voice and the tones that men and women alike have been following for quite a few years now, and you just boggle the senses. I guess that's the best metaphor I can think of, and that's a pretty cool thing. So I like where you took this Medusa. and her skills of turning people to stone. I have to admit, on a side note, that I really do have one or four people that I might want to introduce to Medusa. Just saying. Anyhow.
Yeah, no shit.
Really?
I know.
Right? I bet you know two of them. So, anyway, fabulous share. And Hatter, why don't you comment for AP?
Yeah, you know, AP, I've always commented on the way you structure your sentences just blows me away, and I've always enjoyed it. And during your read, I found one perfect example of what I mean, and I'm going back, and I cannot find it. I think it's how you read it. That, well, in a sentence, you have the subject and the – is it the predicate? What is the subject and the
– Predicate.
Mm-hmm. He cuts the predicate short, and he reverses it with the subject sometimes. And it that's the little trick he does so well. And I had that, and I can't find it. I don't know which one it was. I think it's the way you read it. Yeah.
English 101 with Hatter.
Hey, I got Asian.
That's
I got
fine.
Asian English. I used to speak it. Yeah.
Awesome. And Dave Prophet, please.
Well, I really like this. I like the way AP read it, but I like the descriptions in here and the way he set her up and described her. That's really, really premier. You know, it's dark. It's colorful. In a dark sort of way, narrow corridors here, dark nooks to crannies intersect, flaring torches, pale blue arc, light diffuse, it's hard to detect. Just right there, he's talking about the lighting conditions and the color of the arc and the environment that she's in. I really like this. I thought it was really well done. AP has a way of making his stuff classy just by reading it the way he does, and this was no different. Really enjoyed this. You did the creature Medusa, you know, 100%. And I think somebody introduced my ex-wife to Medusa at one time or another because she was cold as stone. That's for sure. Anyway, good job, AP.
No, good. Thanks, Doug. Cheers. Thank you.
Awesome comment. And Gress, comment, please.
Well, I always felt bad for Medusa because, you know, she was a Gorgon sister, and her parents were, you know, brother and sister, from what I recall from my days of, you know, Greek mythology or whatever. So it's like, they cast her off into this place and made her into this monster. And she had nothing, she was never useful until her death. And I like the way that you phrase your poetic phrasing and the tale of what she does. And I like the descriptions, her eyes fixed while they're honed onto any living creatures near, those sighted turned to stone from just the briefest gaze sphere. And she was given this terrible, like, existence, basically kept away from everything, protecting the treasures and those type of things from what I recall. And I just, you know, it's a sad tale. And I think there could be a movie made more about her. I think that would be a good role or good like backstory, because there's a backstory there that I think needs to be told, and how she became bitter, and how she was at one point, she was the most beautiful, one of the most beautiful women in the world. And then they gave her a hair of serpents that turned people into stone. So I really enjoyed it. Thank you, AP.
It was a Kraken.
you've been watching too much of the new movies, man.
Not bad.
You ever seen a guy that's actually got a Scottish accent?
He's the cocking.
You gotta have it to say that line. At least
it's a sign eventually. Lady A, will you comment for AP before you read, please?
Yes, I will. I thought that this was really well done. I think that I almost picked that picture as well, Medusa. You really made it a very dark rite. And here's one of the things, one of the verses that really jumped out at me. It is the third verse. Creature appears, head flows where vipers by a dozen peer, eyes and jaws make vile rows. Venom glistens in jaws as leer. I thought that was really creepy because I can visualize it so well. When I was about 6 years old, I had what they called the red measles. They vaccinate against them. They don't have them anymore, but the red measles. And I was very, very, very sick. But what I remember the most about that was I had a really high fever. And at one point, I was hallucinating. And I remember looking on the floor of the room that I was in, and it was completely and utterly covered in slithering snakes of purple and blue colors. It was just horrifying. And so when I see Medusa, that's what I see. So this was very vivid to me. Well done.
Yeah. Not supposed to look at
Thank
it,
you,
Ray.
You're not supposed to look at it, Ray? Okay.
Yes,
late. Yeah, this gave me the shivers big time.
And I think the purple and blue snakes might have been kind of cool, just saying.
Well, it was really terrifying, actually. I remember screaming and saying there are snakes on the floor, there's snakes on the floor. It's just, I was very, very, very young, but I remember that just like it was yesterday.
But monkeys tear the guts out of a scarecrow's okay, huh?
So,
Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz. Okay, go ahead, Heather.
It's just the Wizard of Oz. When I was a kid, it freaked me out. It does to this day, where the monkeys are tearing the scarecrow apart.
I know, the monkeys were awful, weren't they?
That's scary.
That is tragic.
Yeah.
Well, he's moving around while he's doing it.
Are you hiding out? Are you hanging out, or do you have to go, AP?
Oh, I'm just going to hang out for Lady A's poem, then I'll go after that, Deb.
Thank you, AP.
Awesome. Okay, well then, Lady A, the mic is yours, dear.
All right. I chose Frankenstein's monster, the picture of him, and I called this He Awakes. One man's curiosity conflicts with another's sorrow. Love of science pushed to the brink of tomorrow. Delusions of grandeur boast they can create, claim they are God, our maker. Don't mistake. Body parts collected from graves of those long dead, pieced together bit by bit, a hand, an arm, a face and head. Sutured, stapled, connected lest he break, veins and arteries joined, blood pumps, he awakes. Black circles round, eyes vacant stare, yet he cries. Sallow, pale skin, circumoral cyanosis, symbiotic necrosis. I am but a beast. Who will love me? The least of the least. What purpose do I serve? Do you see how they behave? People gaze upon my face. Fear on theirs can be traced. They run from my outstretched arms, thinking I'd do them harm. Such a lonely place. I hide, stay inside. Of me there is no trace. He struts and crows, says, let all behold this monster I have made. monster cries. He wants to die. He's tired of the human race, unusually born with fear and scorn. Still, he's full of grace. Logic speaks. His heart is weak. He is fearful he shall die. I am flesh and blood. I am not whole. I am lacking my own soul. End poem.
I am not a monster.
Yeah, no, I like that. I like that you were making us feel for him, making us want to weep. Yeah, and it's like I have obviously not similar in word, but in sentiment, I have a poem somewhere with a sad looking Frank on there. And I could feel all kinds of heartbreak in myself for this poor guy that, you know, didn't ask for any of this. And he's like this thing, but just born. So it's like everything's new. And he's curious, and people look at him and they're scared. And it's just like, it's such a lonely place. And the more, as you got down, and by the time you actually read the words, to such a lonely place, I was already like, oh my gosh, it's just, there's something about him. And this one here, this photo, reminds me of the one that they have in Walt Disney World that you can, it's just like a statue. And I have a picture of me as a teenager standing next to him, and just from the look on his face there and here, I've always felt such, I don't even know if pity's the right word, but I'm so empathetic towards his the hand he was dealt, because, like, you know, somebody pulled dead parts from all over the place and sewed them together and didn't even take the time to, like, maybe try to hope that the scar would heal up later. They just flat out, I mean, look at the staples. Scars can be very distinguishing, and they don't have to be a scary thing if they are.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome, Adder. But if the doctor takes the care to use a little patience and some bedside manner, and obviously old Dr. Frankenstein didn't have any of the above, and if you look at it from the plausible aspects, they had to do a few experiments with some things to learn how to heal things and cure things. But to do something like this to poor Frank, it's just so sad. And, man, we got sidetracked from spooky into the heartbreak of poor Frank. But it was an awesome share, Lady
Anne. Thank you so much.
I very much enjoyed it.
Thanks.
AP, you want to comment for Lady Anne?
I do. I mean, it's a classic sort of gothic novel, Frankenstein, and of course, written in 1818. And there was this sort of sense of pity and sadness in the character. And I think it's a great image, because it sort of has that sort of sense of pity and death. And I think what that allowed you to do, Lady A, was write a poem that talked about a person more than a monster.
Yes.
And talked about real emotions that were human emotions, not something that just happened to be put together or stitched together. And so I actually think you did a wonderful job of actually channeling the emotion that was in that picture and putting it down on the page.
Thank you so much. Oh, as soon as I saw the picture, I had to write. That's what I love about your pictures, Deb. They jump out at me most of the time.
I love hearing that.
So Deb, I am going to be tuning up with you, and I will catch you next week.
All right. Love and respect.
All right, AP.
Hope you don't.
Bye, AP.
Thanks, hey. Everybody. Talk soon. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay. Chris, will you comment for Lady A, please?
I just like the way that she wrote it from the perspective of, you know, he wasn't angry. He wasn't mean. He wasn't this monster that everybody thought he was. He was truly such a sorrowful character because he had no idea how he was made or how he came to be. So he was just confused about how life was so supposed to be. And I, the original Frankenstein is still my favorite of all the movies that's been made on it because that's how they portrayed him in that movie. And so this is true to the character of that movie. I really enjoyed it. Very good job.
Thank you very much.
Awesome comment. And let me get one more from David before I push play for Frank.
Well, thank you. You know, I've seen a couple different versions of Frankenstein. We probably all have. The one version that sort of sticks in my mind, and I think the one that got everybody afraid of him and stuff, was when they sent the grave robbers out to get the brain for Frankenstein, something happened to the brain that they wanted to use on him, and so they were coming back kind of empty-handed, so to speak, empty-headed. And they got the brain out of a criminal, and they put that into him. And so then when he woke, he had the mind of a criminal instead of maybe a doctor or whatever. And, you know, that's one of the versions that I heard of him. I thought you did a good job of illustrating, you know, the sadness of doing something this way. I mean, even if we could do it, you know, that old adage that goes, just because we can do something doesn't mean we should. This is a prime example of that, and I thought your poem illustrated that point very well, Andrea, and I think you did a really good job writing it, and I like the rhyme and meter on it, too.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Awesome. Okay. I put the last poems that are left on the board so that we can finish up. And if you will, please click on Frank's poem. I will push play. You don't know, it's Poetic Picasso.
Amidst the rural area of a distant town in the lone star state of Texas, there is a gripping care unleashed by the unyielding wrath of the devil, a madman called by unbidden gas, bearing the guise of an unusual mask, designed from the peeled skin layers of the numerous faces of victims, a macabre obsession for the perverted taste of human flesh. Behind the rows of thick cotton fields is the solitary white house of hell, where thousands of bones and skulls are piled inside the burning furnace. From the creepy cellar of the unthinkable, gruesome carnage, a stench of crimson blood pervades over the grisly fumes. Eerie echoes of haunting screams resound throughout the killing fields, where the scarecrows of mutilated bodies hang as a daunted reminder, and the ebony crows pluck their eyeballs beneath the fibers of straw. The feasting maggots come out of the dried mouths and the droves. A family of cannibals dine on the cooked well-done meat of victims. Psychotic minds of the servants of death and unspeakable horror, they prey on the menacing fears of the fragile minds of people. It is there in the awful pit of the cellar that burns the fiery furnace, near the rows of the decapitated heads aligned in other body parts. The Ancient of Hell performs his skilled surgical masterpieces of human art. But if you dare to enter the cellar, beware of the madman in the mask. Beware of the stripperous sound of the luciferous chainsaw of Baba.
Wow.
That's so serious.
You know, I think that...
Of the lexiferous chainsaw. A bubba.
You said body lotion.
Oh, my God.
Okay, that's it.
Oh, my God.
You can hear.
Are you okay?
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. I didn't
think it is.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Where'd you go on?
Yes.
Wow.
Well, well, well.
Wow.
Every time I thought it was done, there was some more creepiness. That was really cool. You know, some people have voices for certain things, and I have to say without a doubt that Frank definitely has a voice for dramatic reading of dark poetry, dark anything, dark reads, his tones, and then that damn maniacal laugh that gives quite a few people chills. And it's like this time I wasn't expecting it because sometimes he has, you know, ha, 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 ha written at the end, so I'm sort of prepared for it. But that time I wasn't prepared for the laughter, and then that creepy breathing and stuff, talk about adding dimension to the work. My, oh, my. And I see that he's won a shiny silver medal in a contest called Dark or Scary. Yep, as I said, his voice was...
Sure, that wasn't Grass? It wasn't Grass. You okay, Grass?
I think Frank just ate Grass. Something happened. That was wicked. That was really a great presentation. Frank hasn't been on for a few shows, so it was really awesome to get to hear him again. Thank you so much, Frank, for the recording. It was awesome. And that nervous giggle that came from Lady A cracked me up around Halloween. I think I'll have her comment first.
That's why. I was very, like, he's very theatrical and very Vincent Price, and he articulates and he enunciates all of his words just to perfection. And this whole piece was just written so gruesomely and exquisitely creepy. And then, you know, and you're captivated by the storyline and the surgical masterpieces of human art. But if you dare to enter the cellar, beware of the madman in the mask. Beware of the whatever that obstetrics sound, I can't even pronounce those words, of chainsaw, of Bubba. Oh, you expected to, you know, of Lucifer or something like that, but it's Bubba from Genesis. Anyways, it just struck me very, very humorous. I guess that must be the only one.
That's an awesome comment.
No, I agree with you, Lydia.
Hilarious.
Huh?
Oh. Francisco Javier Rodriguez. Excelente.
I want to hear Frank read The Telltale Heart.
That would be cool. Steve, will you comment for some, please?
Oh, yeah, sure. First of all, his read was really good. I have to agree with Lady A. I thought there were humorous parts in it. I thought he did a good job of describing the main character in Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie. I watched it one time. That was enough for me. I didn't need to see any more. But that's, you know, this whole thing is, this whole story is not, you know, they've come upon things just like this, maybe sometimes even worse. you know, in reality. And so, you know, it's not really that far fetched, I don't think. It's plenty gruesome, you know. The feasting maggots come out of their dried mouths in droves. A family of cannibals dine on the cooked, well-done meals of victims, meat of victims. Wow. So, anyway, I also have to agree with what Deb said about the ending. Anytime Frank does one of his SoundClouds, you know, when it comes to the end of it, that doesn't necessarily mean it's the end. Usually it's not. So he always comes back for an encore, you know, and that sort of thing. But anyway, it was a good poem, and I thought it was cool.
Awesome comment. And Adam, I need you to comment for Frank and then read your poem, please.
Okay. I like the surgical masterpiece. Heads align the and other body parts. The agent of hell performs a skilled surgical masterpiece of human art. But if you dare to enter the cellar, beware the madman in the mask. We all were men. It was beautiful. Nicely done. Okay. Where am I? Okay. There I am, right there. Oh, somebody just spoke. There it is. Unholy words. Is what it's, I think it is. Yeah, that's the picture. It goes like this. A cross-dressed psycho mess that plays the dead inside your head. She tantalized by late surprises everything you own. Keeping words that seem absurd, she sounds just like a man. Everything that shines, a bling that she wears upon her hands. Lola loves through the shattered heart, frozen in time as it all falls apart. She finds the end so she can start the game she plays too well. Take it or not, it's all she's got to live within her dreams. Shaken, not stirred from the unholy words, the dead hears her scream.
Long Hatter, that was pretty awesome, and gotta wonder who that she might be. Wow. Keeping words that seemed absurd, she sounds just like a man. Everything that shines a bling, she wears upon her hand. There's that trademark cadence, Hatter. This is kind of vicious for just a few couplets. I think you did a hell of a job with this one. And I, another chick I'm fairly confident that I don't want to meet unless, of course, I'm introducing her to Medusa. Just saying. Really cool brevity. Mediate, what do you think?
Well, he's got perfect cadence and rhyme, of course. That's just who he is. And I thought this was... I'm just trying to bring it up again. Hang on a second here. Where are you, Hatter? There you are.
Dancing down the street.
And I thought that it was interesting that you spoke about this girl and a cross-dressed psycho mess that plays the dead inside your head. She tantalizes by late surprises everything you own. Your rhyme is just so perfect. It's always a song, whether it's a brevity or if it's a long poem. I thought that you did a great job on this. And the last couple of taken or not, it's all she's got to live within her dreams. Shaken, not stirred from the unholy words, the dead hears her scream. Wow. Yeah, that was great. Very
Thank
good.
You, Amy.
You're welcome.
Awesome, Cher. And I'm going to switch Phil's position with Laughing Souls so that, because she's on the board right now, that way she'll be able to hear hers. It won't affect the fact that Gress goes after the next poem. I just wanted to point that out. So if you guys would click on Bluebells and Garnet Fangs, please.
Gotcha. Got it.
Bluebells and Garnet Fangs, a poem by Laughing Soul. Garnet dewdrops cascade on Bluebell, demonic fangs trail the wine dusk beneath the foliage of amber musk. Abloom ashen petals, sapphire flames, heaving cosmic glitters, bathing in bloodthirsty moonstone glimmers, sipping nectar aphrodisiac, night comes alive, asunder in twilight hues, pheromone hive. A music flute at midnight hour has suckles the enchantress, onyx silhouette of the vampire. Silent wind caresses embers wild, blossom fragrances serpent beguiled, velveteen bosoms cast a spell, garnet dewdrops cascade on bluebell. End poem.
She fits in just fine.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. You know, I had read this earlier because she had a question, so I read it. But man, if I didn't already know it, and I needed a little bit of proof of how much difference it makes to get to hear it read by the poet rather than just on the words of the pages, that she just gave us a perfect example, because the hushed tones and that spooky whisper, and there's sensual undertones, but in Vampire, with the suckles of the enchantress and the silhouettes of the vampire, that we got sights and sounds mixed with her wording and her voice. Talk about the total package. Like I said, I had read it, but it absolutely jumped off the page so much more vivid because of that recording. So thank you for the recording. Brilliant share. Wow. Lady Ellie, what did you think?
I agree with you 100%. I think that her voice is very intriguing when she reads. She really, and I like someone who reads like that. Sometimes you have that someone who reads and it's just a monotone, and they're just reading the words off the page instead of living what they're reading. You know what I mean? And she lives what she reads. She has enthusiasm in her poetry and makes it come alive and becomes the characters and that sort of thing. And I love that when somebody can own their own work like that. And she did a marvelous job. I thought it was great.
Fantastic comment. Dave, will you comment for her, please?
Oh, yeah. This was just really, well, when she started reading it, I was intrigued. But the further in it I went with her on it, the more sensual it became, and the breathiness that she uses, and letting it trail off on the ends of the lines there, man, that started pushing some of my man buttons, and I thought it was really, really well done. And you know, the way she wrote it is really classy, and I thought she did a hell of a job with it. And you know, and I agree with what Andrea said about her. She really knows how to put herself into reading it, and it makes all the difference in the world. And mm-hmm. You said the same thing about her, Deb. So really, really an outstanding performance, actually. Not just to read a performance.
Here. Yeah, I totally agree. Great comment. Okay, and Gress, will you comment on that poem and then read us yours?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of like central, like what Dave thought. In my mind, I'm just thinking that this ghost has this erotic tendencies. I don't know why I got that out of that, but I did. And to me, I love the way that she phrased certain words in her poem, and it just made it very poetic. And the way that she read it was soft and light, and but kind of creepy too at the same time. So I think she did a great job on it.
Awesome comment, and you just on the board, sir.
Morbid.
Did you want me to read or?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, please.
All right. Okay, so this one's called Morbid Hunger. So here goes. Morbid intrigue got the better of him. The tourists stepped into the catacombs. Dimly lit hollows inscribed in Latin. Many of the dark voids marked in unknowns. Reaching the third of underground levels, a crusted red door awaits his entrance. Slowly he entered, saw marks of devils. Howling began, his light started to dance. Bravely determined to reach the sanctum, to see for himself what the locals knew. Protecting the dead was the Red Phantom. Year after year, legendary tales grew. Tourist light flickered, and then it went out. Chill crept onto his skin. A laugh was heard. Blood soaked the floor and seeped into the grout. The Red Phantom was hungry. Spread the word.
Damn, Russ, that voice you were just using at the end there was kind of horror show spooky, like you could have just did the intro for the movie that's about to play, and that was like the preface there with the morbid intrigue. Bravely determined to reach the sanctum to see for himself what the locals knew, protecting the dead was the Red Phantom. Year after year, legendary tales grew. There was maybe it was foreboding in your voice as you read. Taurus lights flickered and then it went out. Chill crept onto the skin. Laugh was heard. There was something about there, the Taurus light flickered and then it went out. And it gave me flashes of an American Werewolf in London or Paris or one of them, where they're the tourists and everybody's looking at them and they're not sure what's going on. And then little by little, these things start happening and then somebody gets bit and it's not so funny anymore. And you wind up with a blood soaked floor. But that Red Phantom voice that you used at the end, along with that laughter that you had a little bit before that, Gress, brought some major dimension into this one. Really fun share. And I loved the title, Morbid Hunger. I'm glad you brought this one, and I'm so glad that you called to hang out. Let me get you some comments. Hatter, what did you think?
You know, Gracie, you did a great job describing the storyline. I mean, the second stanza, tourist light flickered and then it went out. You didn't even have to describe what the tourist light was. You just knew it was bad that it went out, right?
That's what happens when you pull around with if there's a myth or there's a legend, why are you going to go try to find it? That's my point.
I didn't hear what you said.
I said, why are you going to go tempt fate? But people in all the scary movies, that's what they do, right? Oh, what's this over here? Why do they do that? I'd be running like 5 miles if I ever seen anything like that.
You hear a noise downstairs and you go downstairs and see what it is. No.
No, I do not.
Right?
Yeah.
No, it
that's right.
It reminds me of that commercial on TV right now where all the kids are there and there's murders going on and there's a car running right there and they're instead of getting in the car and leaving, they go and hide behind the chainsaws and I'm like, yeah, okay.
Are you crazy?
Nobody, right? Exactly. Not that commercial. That's what it. But this was
Paula.
Like I said, brought to life by your voice for sure. Dave, did you get the comment?
No, I haven't. No, I like this. I thought this was really good. It was creepy in the way you read it. I like the second line of the first stanza. The tourist stepped into the catacombs, dimly lit, hollows inscribed in Latin. You know, anytime something's written in Latin, you know it's serious. It doesn't matter whether it's a nursery rhyme or not. If it's just reading in Latin, it's got to be serious, you know. That's just the way it is. Probably because all the doctors and stuff write that way. You know, all their doctor shit is that way. But reaching the third underground levels, a crusted red door awaits his entrance. Slowly he entered, saw a mark of the devils. Howling began, his light started to dance. Really well done, you know. I thought this was really interesting. My favorite deal is when you see one of these cheeseburger horror flicks and all these kids go out camping and then, you know, there's supposed to be either wild animals out or some madman with a chainsaw running around in the woods and they hear something and what happens? The damsel of the whole show runs off into the woods with no boyfriend or nothing just to see what the hell's going on. And I thought, man, you got to have a screw loose, lady. I wouldn't even do that, you know.
I agree.
I mean, it's Hollywood logic, you know? No shit.
Yeah.
Well, there's only four, there's only five scripts for slasher movies, you know.
What's that?
There's only
they
like
have musical
five scripts written for slasher movies.
Yeah, and a musical chairs cast, and they just keep redoing it.
Yeah.
Most of the storylines go 20 years later, it becomes a legend.
Uh-huh.
Nobody believes it.
Yep. Yeah, it's old cookie cutter kind of theme, you know, that they use. You can spot it a mile away, you know.
God. Yeah.
I think my dog could come up with a better script than most of this crap nowadays, but.
Sometimes, yeah.
Your script is really, really good.
Lady A, will
you
comment for Gress before I press the next poem, please?
Sure. First of all, I want to say how good it is to have you calling again, Gress, and it's your sense of humor, and it's been really fun the last couple of days, so I hope you continue to call. Because,
you should have
picked
over.
Yeah.
2 days in a row, man.
I think that this was a really interesting and creepy, right? I use creepy because it is creepy. And the Red Phantom, year after year, legendary tales grew. Tourist light flickered, and then it went out. Chill crept onto his skin. Laugh was heard. Blood soaked the floor and seeped into the grout. The Red Phantom was hungry. Spread the word. This was really good. It reminded me of those, I don't know if they were the Twilight Zone or whatever kind of television programs they were, where they were like legends, you know, were they true or were they not, but they were legends, and there was like this girl and her boyfriend were in the car and they were driving along and the car broke down. And he was going to go get help, and she was to sit in the car and wait for him. And then there was a hand that appeared over the top of the car, like down by the window, and she was screaming. And this is what it reminded me of, that kind of scary. It was really good.
Oh, man, you're chilling me out there.
Morbid hunger.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome, awesome. All right, well, now the last three that we have, you guys, are recordings. So let's get them and we can shut down. So if you go ahead and click on Naomi's poem, which is number 5 on the list. I will push play. Naomi, here we go.
The Ballad of the Lone Wolf, written after a French Quebec song here called Jean le Batailleur. I have no name, nameless and free, but I'm so lonesome that it scares me. I'm an orphan, no name, no town. Under full moons, I was found. Mid stems of worlds where I was born. My life is hard, my love torn. It's no use, no use pretending. All is ruined, all is rotten. Life is hard, there is no hope. When to hang, there is no rope. Pass the bottle, give me a drink. The more I drink, the more I think. There's no future, there will be none. There's just darkness, never no sun. Sometimes I see the horned owl. I hear the call, the wolf's howl. Take your knife, let's go outside. With all this anger curled up inside, I'm always ready for a fight. I'm a strong girl, oh that you'll see, but it's only giving me worries. Bloody stitches and enemies. I have no name, nameless and free, but I'm so lonesome that it scares me. I'm an orphan, no name, no town. Under full moons, I was found.
Feed the dogs.
Wow.
So that is why that music in the background almost made me hang up.
I
that
was going to say,
scary.
That was, yeah, that was brilliant, creepy.
Yeah.
My, oh my. Between the softness in her voice, and then there's like the sing-songness towards the end there, so many pieces. Pass the bottle, give me a drink, the more I drink, the more I think. There's no future, there will be none. It's just darkness, never no sun. Sometimes I see the horned owl, I hear the call, the wolf's howl. Wow, I'm really impressed by this. And Naomi's videos are better every single time she does one. And even though it might sound crazy, but the fact that she could get you on the edge of your seat in creepiness to where you almost felt like you needed to hang up is a tribute to the power of her read of her poem there, I think, you know?
Oh, yeah.
She did a brilliant job with this, and you can tell all the way through with the details and stuff that she had a fun time, and that I get the feeling that Naomi is another fan of the horror genre. I think this came fantastic. Let me check with my story poet over there. David, what did you think?
Oh, yeah, this was really cool. I especially like the way Naomi read this, you know, and I had to agree with Andrea. The background music was ultra creepy, you know. But, you know, it fit good with the storyline here, I thought. Pass the bottle, give me a drink. The more I drink, the more I think. There's no future, there will be none. Oh, that's pretty grim, that line right there. There's just darkness, never no sun. Sometimes I see the horned owl. I hear the call, the wolf's howl. Yeah, this has just got all the elements of, you know, Halloween and the things that go bump in the night. There we go. And I thought it was really a scary poem. And you know, if you look at Naomi's profile picture, she looks like she has a lot of fun. She's smiling. You got these really bright eyes, and I bet she has a lot of fun with whatever she does. And this poem shows that. So, well done, Naomi.
Awesome comment, David. And how about you, Hatter?
I think it's great that she's an elementary school teacher.
I didn't know that. That's really good.
No, it there's a. I was following along, and I thought I had it when she added the last verse. I'm an orphan, no name, no town. It just really threw the whole thing into a different sphere. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Somebody feed the dogs, those Canadian dogs.
Right. I can't wait till she listens to it and she gets to hear your reaction, Lydia. That was your reaction was a comment of the brilliance of that, right, all by itself. Now, if you take a look on the board, Lady A, I think you might be jealous of the photo that Phil chose.
It's the one from Maryland.
Yeah, I put one on the board that I think would appeal to each one of you. And sometimes you pick exactly the ones I think you will, and sometimes you don't. And this one wasn't around for you to get the chance to pick, but this is the one I thought you would have chosen. But if you click on that, Phil's is the second to the last poem of the night. So let's listen to his poem right now.
Bye, Gress.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet called Celebrity Death Mask. Tinseltown is a graveyard filled with waxwork models, powdered lips and hard stares from a Campbell soup can. Dead celebrities in a celluloid world, two-dimensional without a soul, while their bodies decay underground, oblivious to the fame they died for. Drowning in the sea of excess, powdered and painted white lips, turn blue with bleeding track marks, haunting a lonely motel room. Obsessed fans with memorabilia, faded autographs of a lonely star. Die young, leave a good-looking corpse, is the mantra of the golden screen. Fame and vanity, stalked by paparazzi, a bull flashes, step inside a carousel, walk down the road of decomposition. Turn and smile for the camera. Skeletal fragments of a famous someone. Worms chew on the corpse's final act. No cry from the director of cut. Oh, it's a wrap. The end credits roll upon a death scene. End poem.
Wow. You know, it doesn't seem to matter what I toss Bill's way, he can always come up with something really awesome. And I'm sorry, but I had to laugh just a little in the beginning. Tinseltown is a graveyard filled with waxwork models, powdered lips and hard stares from a Campbell soup can. And for some reason, it seems like soup is popping up in a lot of stuff lately. And I'm not sure how I'm feeling about the fact that the last two they showed up in were sort of horror poems. So, I think I said it the last time it happened, when I need some comfort food and I'm not feeling all that great, I'll reach for a can of Campbell's chicken noodle soup. It's a whole big dollar, but I love my Campbell's chicken noodle soup, and it just struck me funny that it popped up in another poem. Anyway, it was stuff like oblivious to the fame they died for. It's a really sad truth there. And then you think about it, the celebrity death mask, and you go back again, because in this, she's sort of like half regular, half dead, half, and it's really, really a sad photo. And he brought some great, obsessed fans with memorabilia, faded autographs of a lonely star, die young, leave a good-looking corpse, is the mantra of the golden screen. And it's, I think, perfectly fitting that he incorporated that phrase into this poem because almost everyone has heard that, die young, need a good looking corpse. And if he wrote nothing else, like if this was a contest to caption the photo and he put that under it, I'd be inclined to award him for that because it's an obvious brilliance that comes from the prompt itself. But back to his poem with his details and stuff, like skeletal fragments of a famous someone, just little nuances that capture this feel here. Mm-hmm. And I love listening to Phil read because I like the way he pronounces his words and stuff. So another fabulous year, Phil, and a great recording as always. Very much appreciated. Let me get you some comments. Hatter, comment for Phil?
Yeah, the verse is, it's better to burn out than to fade away.
There you go.
I think that was Neil Young who actually said that first.
Yeah, it is.
Of course, I had to go look that up to make sure I was right, so I don't have it in front of me. It seems like Phil's getting more comfortable recording too. Love his accent. It seems like everything's loosening up with his writing. A little more relaxed, it seems. Nicely done, Phil.
Awesome comment. And David?
Oh, yeah. This is, if ever there was a good commentary about movie stars, this is it. You know, I like the center stanza here. It says, drowning in the sea of excess, powder and painted white lips turned blue with bleeding track marks, haunting a lonely motel room. We always ask ourselves, well, how bad could you feel if you were making $1 million per movie, you know? we're not in their position, so we don't know, but I think I could probably get by all right. Fame and vanity stalked by paparazzi, a bulb flashes step inside a carousel, walk down the road of decomposition, turn and smile for the camera. Yeah, that's a good statement on the paparazzi, that's for sure. Still's reading of this was superb. It always is. And I agree with what Hatter said about him. He's getting more comfortable with reading. And, I'd really like it when we get a chance to listen to his SoundClouds. They're really good. This poem was, I really liked it. I don't have much patience for some of these Hollywood types. And there's a few of them that I can handle real well, like Clint Eastwood, for example. But the rest of them, you know, they make me scratch my head and go, huh. So anyway, this is well done. Good job, Phil.
You mean even Tom Hanks?
Oh, no. Hell no. I like Tom Hanks. He's another one. I just didn't have my
Keith,
list on hand. Yeah, I know. No, I love Tom Hanks. He's great. He is great. So is Denzel Washington, for that matter. He's another one of my favorites, you know.
So.
Awesome comments, you guys. Now, if you would please click on Shelley's poem versus The Last of the Night, and I will push play.
Hunting alone. Scouting out a romantic feast, hidden in plain sight she does wait, for wandering eyes to catch hers, a way for her to infiltrate. Prefers to go hunting alone, she can attract more attention. Many years lived, teach many skills, husband at home she won't mention. Traps a meal with her sex appeal, lulled into false security. Teasing, tantalizing, she plays, expertly masks impurity. glazed amber eyes stare hungrily, luscious lips leaking liquid life, pure angelic porcelain skin, beware the temptress vampire wife. End poem.
Mm.
Wow.
Wow. That was cool.
Yeah, an awesome read. How about it?
Which one did you go to?
Trying to see. I'll see if I can remember photo was and get it up there. But how about another amazing accent?
Yeah.
I love her pronunciation. She's got a great voice. She can attract more attention. Many years lived. Teach many skills. Husband at home, she won't mention. Gotta wonder why. Traps a meal with her sex appeal lulled into false security. Yeah, really cool. And that part makes me think that I do know what her photo is. So I will look for that while you guys comment. But Shelley, another great poem, another awesome recording. I appreciate it very much. Keep them coming. You got great details in this one. So let me get you some praise when I find the photo. Lady A, you want to go first?
Sure. I really enjoyed I read her for the first time just the other day, and so I was very happy to see that she submitted another one for tonight. And let me just pick some. And her voice lent a great deal of credence to it as well. Scouting out a romantic feast hidden in plain sight, she does wait for wandering eyes to catch hers away from her to infiltrate. And then she's talking about attracting, almost luring a person into her clutches, let's say. Traps a meal with her sex appeal, lulled into false security, teasing, tantalizing. She plays expertly masks impurity. What a great line that is. And then beware the temptress vampire wife. I thought it was a really good write.
Awesome comment. And David? Are you muted?
Sorry about that. My Cyclops mute button was staring at me. I really like this poem. Her voice, when I first heard it, I thought, oh, God, we got another one of these English accents to deal with here. I guess it's English. I'm not sure. Anyway, it's really good. And the way she read it was superb. You know, it's not one of these things where she's stumbling over words and stuff. You could tell that she actually practiced reading this thing, and all the inflections and stuff were in the right places. It says, traps a meal with her sex appeal, lulled into false security. Teasing, tantalizing, she plays, expertly masks impurity. That's really cool. That last line there really talks about that stanza a lot. You know, it's a good thing that there's not really any female vampires, because I'd be dead. I mean, I just would fall for them left and right, you know. I would. I'm just a sucker for those gals, you know. I like their seriousness and the way they look at you, and their beautiful eyes are hypnotic and, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, I'll take the real ones any day to those. But anyway, this was a really fascinating story, and I'm going to read more of this lady's stuff. This is outstanding. Really good.
Awesome comment. And the photo is on the board. And Hatter, you want to comment?
Yeah, she's I'm not familiar with it. Has she written for the shows before, Shelley?
She's been on a couple, yeah. She's fairly new, but I'd say she's contributed poems about a half a dozen-ish times at least now.
And it rhymed. God love it.
Mm-hmm. Really, really well, too.
Yeah, she uses that longer line type rhyme, which I thoroughly enjoy. The cadence is spot on. This poet is talented.
Yeah,
I put that in the comments. Good job, Shelley.
And
so much better hearing their voices.
Sorry.
Just say it's good to hear their voices when they read their own.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it is.
I totally agree. Lady A, would you like to comment?
Well, I really, I'm lost here. I really enjoy her stuff. I think I already commented, didn't I? Maybe not. My soul, I'm lost again, of course.
That happens to me a lot.
It's okay.
I did put the photo on the board, though, Lady A, if you wanted to see.
Cool.
I'm going to have to refresh me on it. I can't find anything.
Okay.
I can't either.
Okay. She is.
Ooh.
The red.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm.
She's so homely, mm-hmm. though, eh, that girl in the picture?
Oh, she's pieced together.
Oh, I
joking,
I'd suffer with it.
Joking is sarcasm.
Yeah. I'd probably suffer with her, I think. Probably close my eyes when I kissed her.
Yeah, I did comment on Shelley's piece.
Okay,
there it is.
All right, well then, on that note, we're going to wrap up. And I would like to say thanks, Hatter, for always being there. And I want to say thank you to Kay and Steven and Angel and Wayne and Laughing Soul and Phil the Poet and Naomi and David and Shelley and Frank and Forgotten Mage and Hatter and Budo and AP and Jeff. And I say this repeatedly, but it's no less true. Each week, you guys blow me away with your talent. And I'm utterly amazed, always impressed. And keep the amazing poetry coming. What else can I say? And Dave Prophet, I will patiently wait to find out what your new character smells like. And in the meantime,
she's going to have a perfume.
Go ahead, Dave. She's going to have to.
Oh, yeah. She's just going to have a special perfume for sure. I'll have to work on that one. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Gunpowder.
Sounds like a plan. Sounds like a plan. No,
gunpowder
and cotton candy taken.
No.
Yeah.
That
one's taken,
yeah. Hey, you know
perfume.
What? I saw.
A perfume.
Yeah. You know what I saw the other day? I saw a perfume that was making money hand over fist, and it had the same type of nonsensical name to it. You know, it wasn't cotton candy and gunpowder, but I thought to myself, well, goddamn, Dave, you should do something like that, you know, make some money off of that. You know, I don't know. But anyway, I thought it was funny. I thought about that when I saw this perfume. I don't know where I saw it, but on the Internet someplace.
Yeah. Well, I think I mentioned
the universe.
I think I mentioned a couple of years ago that you want to patent that or copyright that combination.
Yeah, you did. You did, Deborah. Yeah, absolutely. And this gal, this Norlethia, she will have some sort of a fragrance guaranteed to blow your mind. I'll come up with something. You know, Deb, you just made me decide that I'm going to have to write some more about this woman, you know, along with the Dark Mother. So, you know, I've got another character that I can stuff into my poetry.
The universe has a smell. Remember that, Dave? The universe has a smell.
Yeah, it
the
does.
Actual,
yeah,
it
does.
Smells like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like
you know, there are some
powder.
Galaxies. Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, there are some galaxies out there that produce ethanol. They have a long molecular chain in them just due to the way the supernovas and stuff interacted in that part of space. And they've actually detected ethanol, which is a primary alcohol, you know, floating
yeah.
around out there in the stardust and stuff. That's really cool, I think. You know,
make it off
that's
off
kind
the
of
world. Pretty explosions. Yeah, big explosions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
Oh,
great, great
you
show, Deb.
Awesome.
Thank you. But let me just tell you that tomorrow night is Raconteur's show, and he would like you to write about the differences between Halloween now and Halloween when you were a child, the things that you've
oh.
noticed.
Oh, boy.
Nice.
Which there's
yeah.
so many things. That seems like it would be a really awesome. And then I have to see. Yeah, that's at 11 p.m. Eastern. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm trying to figure what 8 o'clock what
our
angle.
Time,
yeah, and I was trying to figure out what angle
it's,
I might take, and I still haven't figured it out yet, but we shall see. And I'm popping a link on the board right now, Monday night's show. On steampunk, if you want to look at the images and get your photos early, just add your
yeah.
choice to the board. The earlier you pick, the better the choice. And
I love
other
the steampunk
than that,
stuff. It's cool as hell.
And other than that, I'll just mention that Stephen and
yeah,
Kay are live over at A Poetic Slice, and they are celebrating Michael Myers for Halloween. I will be headed over there myself well, shortly. And
tall, dark.
On that note, Tyler, what song would you like us to go out of this place with? Hatter?
Somebody to Love.
Am I still here? Are you guys can hear me?
I can.
Yeah, I can hear you. Mm-hmm.
Anybody
can anybody hear me?
I can.
Yep. Yeah.
Can anybody hear me? All alone.
Hmm.
In space, no
okay, well,
you
if
scream.
You can hear me, great. I can't hear you guys, but I had an amazing time. And I am just going to push play and get us out of here. This song is by Alanis Morissette, and it's called Uninvited. Have a great night, everyone.
Good night, Deb.
Love
Thank
respect.
You.
Good night, Deborah.